This week, we have Robin Nasseth, who is with Media Artists Group as an agent there. She's been working as an agent and as a casting director for the past 35 years and comes to us with incredible insights into life as both an agent and a casting director. So, hello, welcome, Robin.
Oh, thank you, Versa. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there are so many places to start with you. I mean, you've been doing this for such a long time. Like, you started with Norman Lear's Tandem Productions.
That's right.
In the casting office there with Mark Hirschfeld. Then you started working. So how was that? Norman Lear, I mean, he's just one of the most adorable human beings on earth, you know.
Yeah, he was amazing. That was our Mark and my first job, and we worked under a woman named Eve Brandstein, and we cast Facts of Life, Silver Spoons, Who's the Boss, Different Strokes. Square
Wonder
Pigs.
Years, Twin Peaks.
Wonder Years was later. Wonder Years was later.
that was later.
When I was at ABC. But with Norman, we did Facts of Life, Silver Spoons, One Day at a Time, and Square Pegs. So those were the shows that we cast. And I left there in 84 and then went over to the network where I worked on about 150 pilots as a director, as an assistant director, and then about 150 more pilots as a director of casting. So, and that's where I did Growing Pains, Wonder Years, all the
Twin
shows
Peaks,
that you have
right?
on my bio. Moonlighting, Twin Peaks, Full House,
Sister,
Boy Meets World, everything that was done at ABC from 84 to 95, I was a part of. And, it was amazing. It was lots of fun. And, and then I left in, 96, and Patrick Bach and I started our own casting company, and we cast for 10 years together and did a lot of projects. We did Strip Mall, the pilot and series for Comedy Central, and we did L.A. Law, the movie, and we did one of the Halloween movies. And we just worked a lot. We did a pilot with Kelsey Grammer called Alligator Point for NBC. So we worked for 10 years and did a lot of casting, and then I became an agent in 2009, and became an agent. And in 2011, I went over to work with Raphael Berko at Media Artists, where I am now. Head of the youth division. Yeah, I'm head of the youth department there. So
how do you, what was it that, guided you into making that decision to go into agency work?
Liked casting, but the thing about casting is a lot of times when you have a great idea and they end up using your idea, you don't get the credit for it because the director and the producer take the credit for finding the actors. But if something happens and somebody is misbehaving on the set, guess who gets blamed? The casting director. So it's one of those kind of thankless jobs. And I just, I'd always thought being an agent would be fun. And I'm just really glad I made the change because I love my job every day. And it's really fun.
So, with casting back then, you seem to have a wealth of talent. And it's very different to today because there was a lot of mitigating circumstances back then. I mean, there's always been, rejection and the kind of the usual stuff with actors. But there's always been this kind of amazing pool of talent. Do you find that still exists today? There's an amazing pool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think I have an amazing pool of talent. I'm very fortunate. I have two actors on series right now, and that's a lot more than a lot of my agent friends that I know. I have Fali Rakotwavana, who started with me when he was 10 years old, and he started on Ricky, Nicky, Dicky, and Dawn, which was a silly kids show. But that's where he started, and then he worked his way up. And now, after 11 years, he is on a series called Unprisoned on Hulu, and he plays Kerry Washington's daughter and Delroy Lindo's grandson, Kerry Washington's son and Delroy Lindo's grandson, and he's in his second season on that. And then I have a young man who is working on The Chosen, which is a very, very popular, hugely popular Christian show that is on Netflix and in movie theaters. And I have the young man that plays Andrew, the disciple, on that show. So I'm very blessed to have two working actors, along with all the actors that do recurring roles and guest stars and, you know, co-stars. So
absolutely,
yeah, it's fun.
So how do you find talent, and you know, what separates the ones
showcases and workshops? I do a lot of showcases and workshops. I travel. I've gone to many, many different cities around the country to different workshops and showcases. I do something called Industry Network here twice a year, which brings in actors from all over the country. I do IMTA here every January, which brings in actors all over the country. And then I have many, many smaller showcases and workshops that I do during the year. And then also I am lucky to have many casting directors that I know that recommend actors to me, and also managers call me and recommend actors to me. So those are the three ways that I find talent.
So what separates the ones for you that, you know, you look at them and you go, yes, definitely want to work with that person?
Well,
what is it about
I
that person?
It depends on what I'm looking for. You know, if I have three young people in the same category, I might not be looking for a fourth. But if I don't have anybody in that category, then obviously I'm going to be very interested in an actor that, you know, I can have in a certain category. I try not to have more than two to three in each category. And, you know, we're talking about Caucasian actors as well as Black actors, Asian actors, Hispanic actors, actors from South Asia, actors that are Native American. The list goes on and on and on. But I try to have a very, very diverse list. And I look for people that are very natural. You know, I'm looking for the kind of actors you would see on Stranger Things, actors that are just very natural and can you feel like you're watching people you know and you're not watching acting. So, yeah, that's my criteria.
It is that, isn't it? It is that where, you know, there's got to be a realness to the person who you know, who you kind of looking at, because that's what casting directors are looking for too.
Yeah, and another great example is our client Kayvon. Kayvon, who just recently did a great guest star episode on FBI. I've had him for several years. He came to me with no credits, and we just kind of like, you know, started slow and built up, and now he just recently did a wonderful guest star, and you know, you and I were very lucky to get him that. So, you know, I look for actors, and he is Middle Eastern and he speaks Farsi, which is amazing and very, very much in demand right now. So
and he also,
you know, we got lucky
French
with him
too. Yep.
Yes.
And he
yes,
speaks
which is
French
not as much
as well,
in demand,
which is amazing.
It may be. It may be. So, yeah, I just look for actors that have a special, you know, realness to them and that just seem very honest in their portrayals.
Well, that's what you're looking for, isn't it? That realness and that authenticity that you connect to the actor immediately, because they've opened up and got past that. I'm thinking about what I'm doing as opposed to just being and doing it. You know, there's a big difference.
And we don't want people that are just repeating rehearsed lines. We want people that we believe are saying these lines for the first time. And when I hear an audition and it seems like they're saying these lines for the first time, that's a good audition.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's also your casting eye as well, isn't it? You know, the experience you've had as a casting director, that will bring all of that into play.
Yes. And I also, I'm very good at knowing what casting wants and trying to be very specific about who I send them. So, you know, because I remember when I was casting and these people would send me, you know, 53, you know, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, 7 clients for the same role, and they weren't all right for it. They just were like throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what stuck. And I appreciated the agents that were very specific about their choices and sent me the people that would be absolutely correct for the part. And so I try to do that, and I think casting directors appreciate it, and I get a lot of auditions because of that. So that's from my background as a casting director and casting executive.
Yeah, because, you know, so what is the age range that you're, you know, that you're looking for?
I have actors from 6 years old all the way up to mid-30s. I have one actress I have a couple actresses in their early to mid-30s. And that's only because they've been with me since they were in their 20s and they've stayed. But basically, the most clients that I have that are successful are from 7 to 18 years old. But I do branch out, and Kayvon is in his, you know, early 20s. And I have, you know, other actors that are in their late 20s. And, you know, a lot of it is because these actors have been with me for many years and they stay on because I do a good job for them. So obviously they want to continue. But, you know, when I'm out looking, I'm looking for youth. I'm always looking for young people. So
for the younger ones, yeah. Because
younger people are much easier to get in for casting because they don't need a bunch of credits. They're looking for a look. They're looking for maybe someone that matches a family, you know. So it's much easier to get children in the room than it is adults. And now it's gotten very competitive because you see actors like, you know, Kathy Bates and you know, Jennifer Aniston doing TV series where you never saw that a few years ago. So now it's even more difficult to get your adult actors in because, you know, these movie stars are taking all their parts. So,
yeah,
you know,
commercially as well, actually, they seem to be taking over the commercial world as well, which is, I think, unfortunate. Because that was the place where, you know, young actors could come in and make a difference, you know.
I know. It's true. It's very true. So, you know, I just have found a lot of success with young actors. And, you know, I started Tenzing Trainor, who played Parker on Liv and Maddie. He was on that show for 4 years. You know, I've had a lot of success with young actors, and I love working with them. And that's my passion.
I mean, for me, one of the big questions, too, is, you know, you've worked with some fantastic directors. I mean, what was it like working with someone like David Lynch, who seems to come left?
Well, David Lynch was very specific about what he wanted. So he brought in the people that he liked, and we said very little. We were I was at the network at the time, and he was so exact in how he saw the characters that there wasn't really any argument. You know, there was only one person that could play Log Lady, and there's only one person that could play Laura, and there was only one person, you know, it was very specific, and he knew exactly what he was looking for, and he was a very unique director and had a very specific vision. So the network was, you go do what you do, and we're, you know, then there were some, you know, young producers that would come in and not really know what they were doing, and they needed our help in guiding them and giving them ideas for actors. But, you know, when you've got someone like that who knows what they're doing and has been doing it for years and is very specific about their vision, it's very easy for those roles to be cast.
So wasn't that David, you know, Twin Peaks was David Lynch's first foray into television, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. So, yes, it was.
And that was very different to how he, was he the same with film?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I never worked for him during a film. I only worked on Twin Peaks, so I'm not sure. But, you know, it was a very interesting experience. And thank God we had some very forward-thinking network executives at that time that were very hip, and they got him. And so they allowed him to do what he needed to do. And it was really, it was kismet. It was meant to be, and it was a wonderful experience. And the show, you know, spent a few seasons with great popularity, and we were happy to have it on ABC.
Enormous worldwide popularity. I know I was in London when it launched, and I have to say the whole world stood still when that show went to air because everybody was so intrigued by what he would do, you know.
Yeah,
And yeah. he did a phenomenal job.
Yeah. So, but then that's the opposite of like working on a show like, you know, Growing Pains, where, you know, you've got a family and you've got a dad. And that was a funny story. When I was working at ABC, my boss was at the time casting, you know, she was supervising the casting of Growing Pains, but she had to go out of town for high holidays back to New York. So it was a Friday night and we didn't have an actor for the dad on Growing Pains. And my boss came to me and said, do you have any ideas? We're desperate. You know, we need a dad. And I said, well, you know, what about Alan Thicke? And he's like, Alan Thicke's a talk show host from Canada. He's a producer. He's not an actor. And I said, well, he's a really good dad. Why don't you try him? So he came in and he was great with the kids. And, you know, 6 years later, he made a lot of money being the dad on Growing Pains. So,
he
you know,
really
you never
did.
Know.
He was phenomenal at it as well. He just, you know, he just fitted the part perfectly. It was a great choice.
And you never know who's going to surprise you. So I always keep an open mind.
True.
And, you know, those kind of stories are fun. So,
I mean, because you've set up some amazing showcases for ABC and, you know, you've
yes.
got incredible talent that you brought in, you know, Kevin James, Tim Allen, Ellen DeGeneres,
mm-hmm.
Mark
yep.
Curry, John Stewart, Rosie O'Donnell,
mm-hmm.
Will Ferrell,
yep.
Margaret Cho, George Lopez, Chris
yep.
Tucker, Adam
yes.
Sandler. I mean, phenomenal,
yes, I set up showcases
phenomenal
for all
stuff,
of them.
Robin. I mean,
no one knew who they were. And some of them, you know, Ellen went on to have a series at ABC, as did Tim. So they were successful. Others went on to have series at other places because my executives didn't see it and someone else did. But, you know, what I did
yeah.
was throw people in front of them all the time. And in the case of Ellen DeGeneres and Tim Allen, it worked. So that was something I was very proud of. And
the rest that went
it was
on
fun
to have
going
incredible...
out to showcases. I went out to the Comedy Store and the Improv and the Laugh Factory almost every night for, you know, 8 years. So that was a lot of fun.
8 years, wow. Did
I
you
was
ever
young
sleep?
And single,
I mean, you...
and it was great. Yeah, it was a fun time. It was a fun time to be in the industry. And I did that all through the 80s and 90s. And then I went to be an independent casting director. And that was fun too, but in a different way, you know, because we were interviewing actors all day long and having in-person readings with everybody, you know, and you have somebody like Sybil Shepherd come in and read for you. It's pretty incredible, you know? So
mm-hmm,
that was
definitely.
Fun too, you know, I had a lot of fun doing that. And now I just, I enjoy, discovering new talent and, you know, last year I signed a young actor who had no credits, but he was a baseball star and he did really well in baseball. And so we got him up for a project and he got the part, not because he was a brilliant actor, but because he had no bad habits because he wasn't really an actor. And his baseball skills were beyond, and that's what we needed. And, you know, he ended up playing Jake Gyllenhaal's son on a wonderful miniseries called Presumed Innocent, but it got shelved because that was right when the strike hit. So I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, still, you know, a lot of fun to find these people, and you know, you just never know who you're going to come in contact with and who's going to, you know, become a star on the next show. There's just
Absolutely.
So many types of people.
So many, right? And I
yeah.
mean, it's, you know, you having been in casting and now as an agent, you know, you must have seen so many different changes along the way for the way that A, people are being cast and B, the way that, you know, people are auditioning. Because before you would bring in, you know,
yeah.
a day or two of people, 20, 25, 30, you know, depending on
yeah.
how much time you had for each role.
Yeah. Exactly.
And now it's,
yeah.
you know, tape, 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 tape all day long, you know,
That's
for
it.
The client.
That's it. Yep. But, you know, the new SAG ruling has allowed people to, if you get to the casting people on time, it allows them to be able to self-tape in person on Zoom. So they're actually, I had an actress just recently who got an audition, and I said, can we, you know, can she do her audition on Zoom? And she got 2 callbacks. She's much better in person than she is on a self-tape. So I think that's great that we're coming back around to that, because a lot of actors prefer to be seen in person. And then there's some actors that love to do tape. So, you know, there's something for everybody.
There's a happy balance there, isn't there? You know.
yeah. But yes, it was a lot of work to bring in hundreds of actors for every role. And on pilots, we would see over 100 actors for each role and see them in person and then decide who was best and bring them to the producers. And then the producers would decide who was best and bring them to the network. So it was, you know, there were steps, a lot of steps.
I mean, a lot of steps.
Producers knew what they were looking for, and they would, you know, pick their best people and take them to the studio. And then the studio would say, oh, yeah, we like these people, and bring in a couple more. And then we bring in a couple more, and then they'd all go to the network, and then the network would have the final say. Sometimes you'd get all the actors in the first audition process, and sometimes they'd say, nope, back to the drawing board. We need other choices. And that was always tough. But, you know, I was the person at the network that sat on the phone with the casting directors and helped them come up with more ideas. So, yeah, that was fun too. But
so what easily avoidable mistakes do you see actors frequently making in their auditions?
You know, it's really crazy, but I see a lot of actors that send in auditions and they have their smoke alarm going off in the background. You know, the beep, beep. It's not constant, but it's like every minute or every 2 minutes, you know, and I call them up and I go, did you even notice that you had a smoke alarm chirping in the background during, oh, really? I did? Yeah. Or, you know, there's a siren that goes by, or, you know, people are loudly talking in the background, or there's a baby crying, or, you know, that's a lot of what I see. And in fact, I don't see that many in-person auditions anymore. And the only thing that I can think of that people do that they probably shouldn't do is when they're in a Zoom audition, when they get to the end of the Zoom audition, they shouldn't ask, oh, can I do that again? I need to do it again. Because, you know, there's other people waiting. They probably don't have time to see you again. And what if you did it exactly the way they liked it? You know, they're going to tell you if they need you to change something. So don't automatically at the end of an audition ask to do it again. That, I think, is a big mistake that actors make.
So what about slates, Robin? What are your thoughts on slates? Do you encourage them?
Well, we have, every casting director wants a slate. I don't know about the slates they have on Actors Access. I don't really know if those are important or not. I guess they're okay, but I don't think a lot of people watch them. But what is important is to slate when you do a self-tape. They always want to know your name, where you're located, and your height. That's always an important thing for them to know, because they can't tell on the tape how tall you are. You know, they can see what you look like, but they don't know how tall you are. So it's always important to say your name, say where you're, you know, are you an LA local hire? Are you a New York local hire? If the show is shooting in New York, they want to know that you're a New York local hire, which means you will get yourself to New York and you will find a place to stay. And they can pay you what they need to pay you, but they don't need to travel you. So that's always very convenient and very, very attractive to casting and producers if you can be a local hire where you're in the job you're auditioning for.
Absolutely, and of course they don't pay for accommodation either most of the time.
No, they don't pay for your travel in, and they don't pay for your accommodation. Now, if you're a named talent, that's a different story. But I'm talking about actors that are starting out, you know.
Yes, exactly.
And I tell that to parents all the time, and you know, they're shocked. You know, they think, oh, well, if my kid's going to be on, you know, All American, the producers are going to fly them in, put them up, give them. No, they don't do that. They want actors that live in LA. And if you're coming from someplace else, you better be able to pay for it, bring your parent, and find a place to stay. And that's why I encourage actors to do showcases where they're going to meet people from all over, because make friends with someone that lives in LA, make friends with someone that lives in Chicago, make friends with someone that lives in New York. You never know when you're going to need a place to stay. And I think that's something that actors forget to do, but it's good advice.
It's different now, isn't it? With everything being on tape, there is those network opportunities of the last few years have kind of gone away, but they're coming back. And I think, you know, like you say,
well, you know, my client Folly got unprisoned during the pandemic, and he went on tape, and they liked him, and then he had a callback with Kerry Washington, and that went really well, and then Kerry and Folly went on camera together for the network, and the network loved them and thought they had great chemistry, and he got the part, but he never appeared in person. It never happened. Not until he did his first table read did they ever see him in person. So, and now he's in his second season. So it's really wonderful. And it's, you know, there's many different ways to skin the cat.
Absolutely. So what are your thoughts on headshots?
You need to spend as much money on headshots as you care about your career, because your headshot is your number one calling card. It is what we are putting out there, is what the casting director decides whether they're going to see you or not. So your headshot is very, very important. And when I meet a new actor, if I don't like their headshots, I tell them to send me three websites of photographers that they can afford, and I will pick the best one. And I will say, go have your pictures done with this person. Because I think, you know, a lot of people can't afford the top photographer, but if they send me a website of someone that has a reasonable price and does good work, I will recommend that they go there. Of course, I have my favorite photographers, which I'm not going to list today because that wouldn't be fair. But my actors, I demand that my actors give me the best headshots they can that I can work with, because without a good headshot, you're sunk.
So what should an actor be looking for in a photographer, do you think?
Someone that's been doing it a long time and only does headshots. You know, they're not doing graduation photos. They're not doing fashion. They're doing headshots. Headshots are very specific, and headshot photographers know how to do them. And people that aren't headshot photographers don't know how to do them. So that's the first number one rule, is to find someone that only does headshots.
Yes, I found that as well, Robin. You know, those people who are not headshot photographers and haven't done it for a while, they get into more the editorial space, which is not what we want.
Right, and it looks very fancy. I had a girl send me pictures the other day dressed up like a princess. you know, my casting directors don't want to see a little girl dressed up as a princess. They want to see her in a sweater. They want to see her in a t-shirt and a jean jacket. We don't need her to look like a princess. But, you know, she went to a photographer that does pageants. So that's what you get. So, you know, that's why it's smart to go to the right photographer and somebody that just really specializes in actors' headshots. Not fashion, not fantasy, not, you know, Vaseline on the lens. We don't need that.
No, we
need
real
good headshots. And headshots are super, super important. Your resume is important as well. Your resume needs to look good, and you need to, you know, work with your manager or your agent on creating a good resume. Because I've seen people that have, you know, ridiculous resumes that they shouldn't have, you know, resumes that aren't done correctly. So that's really important. And there's websites where you can go and look up actors' resumes and how actors' resumes should look. You know, so those are two very important things, your headshot and your resume. And also a clip. Very important for actors these days to have a good clip on themselves. Something recent. I don't care if it's an audition of a self-tape that they did. I recently told our actor Kayvon to put up a clip, you know, his new FBI clip. It doesn't matter how short it is. It doesn't matter how, you know, I don't think casting directors have longer than a 15-second attention span most of the time. So 15 to 30 seconds is plenty. And you can put up a great self-tape that you did, or put up a clip of a show you did. Or the only thing I wouldn't tell you to put a clip up is live theater, because that never translates well to a clip. It's better to do and you know, send in a good, strong audition that you did.
And you know what astounds me, Robin, is when people send in their reels and they're not talking. They've just got music over.
Right. Yeah, no, we can't use that. We can't use the commercial where you're running through the field, you know, right, with flowers behind you. That's not going to help us. We need something where you're speaking. Yes. So that's why I have an actor that's gotten lots of jobs, and all he has on his Actors Access is three self-tapes that he did for projects that he got very close to. He didn't even get the projects, but he got very close to the projects, and they were damn good auditions. So that's what he uses, and that's what gets him in the door.
But so, isn't that, you know, win the room? Isn't that what everyone says? It's like, win the room.
Win the room.
They will bring
Absolutely.
You back.
Absolutely. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you don't get the part. If you won the room and they bring you back. I had an actor that I think went out for Criminal Minds 7 times until they finally got him the job. And the job was the perfect job for him, and he did great. And they brought him back again after that. So, but 7 times he auditioned. You know, Sometimes it takes that. You'd be happy that they want you back. Someone... Be happy that they're trying to get you a job, you know?
Exactly. They love you. They keep bringing you back. And a lot of actors think, oh my God, I'm useless. They don't care about me. But I go, but they're bringing you back. They care about you and they want you to succeed.
That's the badge of honor if they're bringing you back. That's amazing. You know?
It really is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what about the clips themselves? You know, I also find that sometimes they don't show themselves as much as they show the other person.
That's a big
mistake. You see the tapes and you see more of the other person. You think, well, I'd rather see the other person. Who are they?
I had a girl that sent me a clip the other day. She was totally in profile, and the guy she was doing the scene with was facing me. I'm like, wait a minute. This is, you know, not the right coverage. You need the coverage where you are on camera, not where he's on camera. And she's like, oh, yes, I'll look for something different. And she sent me the right scene. But she sent me a scene where she was in profile. But I really like that monologue. But we can't see you. It doesn't matter if we like the monologue. We need to see your face. So, you know, you need to be on camera. And a lot of people send me tapes where it's very dark. You know, a lot of these indie films are done in darkness. I can't see your face. I can't know what you're doing. So the darkness does not help me.
But
we need to have light.
But that's also with headshots as well. Sometimes the headshots is black on black hair, and you know the hair disappears into the background. And
yeah, no, and you need to have you need to wear something that contrasts with the background, and your hair needs to be, you know, different than what you're wearing. And it's just. And I send people samples of what I think headshots should look at. A lot of times people don't know, and I send them headshots that I like. And I say, try to do something like this. So that helps a lot because sometimes they just don't know. They just don't know any better. So
right.
I try to send them examples of headshots that are working for clients.
Yes, because a lot of the time they're not educated. They don't do enough research themselves to see what is a good headshot.
Right.
And I love the fact that you
and
send out samples.
A lot of people that you meet at showcases are just, you know, they were brought into the showcase because they had a great look and someone stopped them in a shopping mall and said, oh, would you like to be on this showcase? And they go, yeah. And the parents don't know anything about the business, you know. And when that's the case, I always try to make sure they have a manager, because a manager can help them where I can't, because I don't have time to hold
their
hand and go through who should be your photographer and who should be your coach and who should be. I have, you know, 111 clients, and a good manager has 25 to 30. So they have a lot more time to handhold. So that's why I think it's always really very important to have a good manager. And that's why I like working with managers, because they can help the actor a little more closely than I can. I'm there to submit and pitch and do the negotiation. They're there for everything else.
Absolutely. And they're a good right hand to you too, you know, because
Absolutely.
They can fill in all the gaps where you, you know,
exactly.
you don't have
and they
that
also
time.
Can submit, and they also can pitch, and they can also do that. But, you know, we're there to, you know, basically negotiate and try to get the actors in on the auditions. And the manager is just their everyday contact and the person that they need to rely on. So they don't have to rely on me because I can only do so much.
Absolutely. And there's only so many hours in a day that you can do that too.
Only so many hours in a day. That's
true. Exactly.
But I do start working when I wake up in the morning, and sometimes I'm working till, 10, 11 at night. So, that's the life of an agent. You know, you work on the weekends, you work. And I was watching self-tapes of kids. I had teenagers doing General Hospital auditions this weekend. I spent the whole weekend watching auditions of General Hospital and giving notes and having them do them again and, try to make them better. And, hopefully one of them or two of them will get callbacks. But that's,
fantastic.
That was my weekend.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
So that's what we do.
So on the resume, do you look at training?
Yes, I look at training, and I always like to see improv on a resume. So I think it's very important for people to do improv in their acting classes. There's so many shows that they depend on, like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is all improv, and Curb Your Enthusiasm is all improv, and Seinfeld was improv. There's so many shows where they really need you to be able to improv at the drop of a hat. And in auditions, they might say, okay, now here's the situation, go. And if you don't know how to improv, you're going to be lost and you're not going to get the part. So I think it's very important for actors to have improv on their resume. Good training and improv.
What about theater? Do you think that's important?
I like theater. I like seeing theater on a resume. I don't want to see only theater, but I like seeing theater because that means they've been in front of people. They're not afraid. They can get up on a stage. They know how to project. I like that.
But it's very different to, film and television because theater
is
all out there.
And I find a lot of times when actors have only musical theater, they're a little big in their auditions.
Yes, too big.
And that's, that's where they need to go to a nice, good, solid cold reading class, somewhere in Los Angeles and get that training because, it's different to go up for, Grey's Anatomy than to be the lead in Merrily We Roll Along,
Right.
It's two completely different things and they don't cross over. So, you need everything, you need theater. I think it's great for actors to do theater. I think it's great for actors to do some, musical theater. I think it's great for actors to take all kinds of classes, an actor should be training every week. There's no excuse for them not to. That's like, a gymnast. You don't get to the Olympics by not training every day. You should be training every week as an actor. And if you're not, then you're not serious.
Exactly, because that's the muscle, isn't it? The muscle needs to be kept fresh all the time because
the muscle needs to be exercised.
Well, I used to do this.
Yeah. A muscle not worked will atrophy. So that's not good.
It's definitely not good.
No.
So what about commercial class? Would you prefer your,
I don't work in commercials at all. So I don't really have anything to say about that. But I have had actors get auditions from a really good commercial with lines that they have on their actor's access. Some actors have been called in because their commercial was good. So, if somebody has a good commercial, I'll look at it. I'll see it. And if it's good and it's real, then, why not?
Absolutely. Why not? I love that. We've looked at, headshots and reels and resumes. But to me, a really important thing about resumes is to get the format right, which is what you were saying earlier,
Yes. And you can get that online. You can look that up online. That's something that you can research and find out. Or, if you have an actor that you know that you respect, ask them how their resume is formatted, but I think, it's also something a manager can help you with. A manager can send you a copy of one of their clients' resumes that looks good and is formatted correctly, and you can follow that. There's no reason you can't. Nobody cares if you, copy a format of a resume, but it needs to look clean and it should all be on one page. I have actors that send me resumes all the time that are 2 and 3 pages long. I'm not going to read that. You need to pick out the most important stuff and have it on one page.
Yes, and the mistake they make, too, is they put in background, which is a big no-no.
Yeah, no, never put background and never put modeling on a resume.
No.
They do acting, casting directors that do TV shows and movies do not want to see about your modeling and your, you know, all the different things you do. Oh, I was a stunt person and I did this and that. No, they don't want to see that. They want to see your acting experience. That's all they care about. So, right. You know, don't put the modeling and don't, you know, you can put commercial list upon request. That's great. And then if they want to see it, they can ask for it. But you don't, you know, yeah, don't put background work on your resume. Nobody's impressed with that. Anybody can go to Central Casting and become an extra. So it's not something exactly. That takes a skill. You know, it's a nice way to learn how to be on a set. And, you know, I think it's a good, you know, training to do it a couple times for young actors that have never been on a set. So they can see what a set's like. But after that, no. If you're a serious actor, you're not going to be doing background.
Exactly. So, you know, what do you think an actor can do immediately to build up their resume in a way that makes them more appealing to an agent or a casting director?
Oh, that's a very hard question. If I could answer that question, I'd be a millionaire. That's really, really, really hard. You know, I mean, like Folly. Folly started with, I got him a one-line role on Ricky, Nicky, Dickie, and Don. That was his first thing. He put that on his resume. Then he got a job on Raven's Home. We put that on his resume. Then he got a job on a movie. We put that on his resume. And every year he would, just about once a year, he would get a job. And in between, guess what? He worked at McDonald's because he knew that he wasn't ready yet and he didn't have everything that he needed to get where he was. And finally, after 10 years, he's on a series and he worked very hard and he was not ashamed to tell people when they asked him on the red carpet, what did you do before this, to say, oh, I worked at McDonald's. And before that, I was on the, you know, Secret Society of the Second Born Royals. I had a part on that. And the year before that, I was on the Mick. And the year before that, that's an actor, you know, needs to start slowly. So, you know, you have a good agent, they can get you started, and a good manager, they can get you started. And, you know, like we've built Kayvon's building, you know.
Yes.
That's what you have to do with actors. You have to build them slowly. There's no overnight success and there's no overnight, you know, it's very rare that something happens like, you know, even Bruce Willis had done lots of theater when he got moonlighting. Yeah, he was a bartender and got discovered by being a bartender, but he had training. He had done things. He had been in movies. The other night I was watching, The Verdict. And he was one of the jury people. He was on the jury. He was background. Bruce Willis. I'm like, oh my God, that's Bruce Willis. He was background. But he started somewhere and then he did theater and then he became, you know, famous for being on Moonlighting. You know, I was one of the people that helped him get cast because they were going to go with another actor. And, you know, the two women in the room, me and Lisa Mione, said, oh no, this guy's got sex appeal. You got to go with this guy. And they did. And then the rest is history. So you can, you know, you start out, it doesn't matter. You know, you just need to build yourself a good team. And if you, I hear that casting directors and agents and managers are out at Groundlings and Upright Citizens Brigade all the time looking for actors. So get involved in one of those groups. You can get discovered
Absolutely.
By doing that. You know,
Absolutely.
There's many different ways to, like I said, many different ways to skin a cat.
Absolutely,
everybody has a different story of how they started, and nobody started at the top. No one.
Nobody. No one.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I was going to say to you was, you know, preparation is everything because you can see it in the tape.
Yes.
You know, somebody
yes.
really digs in and
yes.
And looks
and
at
I
the lines.
And I highly recommend going to your coach. When you get a tape, I highly recommend, unless you've been on multiple series, even Folly, when he went to tape for his series, he went to his acting coach and they worked on it together. And she helped him and he got the series because of the work he did with his acting coach. But he'd been on multiple shows and recurred on shows, and but he always goes to his acting coach. I've had people say, "Oh, I didn't have time to, you know, put this on tape. I missed the deadline." Really? Well, Tenzing Trainor was on a backpacking trip in the Himalayas, and he found a place to put himself on tape for a pilot. And, you know, if he can do that, then you can find a way living in Los Angeles to put yourself on tape for a role. So I don't.
It's so true,
no
isn't
excuses.
It?
No excuses, you know?
I'm right there with you on that, Robin, because, yeah. You know, it takes, what, 5 minutes to tape? I mean, obviously, you've got to learn the lines and you've got to integrate.
Yeah, memorize your lines and then go have somebody read opposite you. It could be your mother, it could be your best friend, it could be a person in your acting class. And that's why it's important to go to acting class, because actors will help each other with self-tapes and you don't have to hire someone. Actors will help each other with self-tapes, and you can have one of your actor friends read opposite you. And, you know, oh, I can't afford it. No, there's no excuse. You know, get the tape in. You know, this is your job. This is all your job is. Your job is to get your tape in on time and get it in early, because if you wait till the last minute, they probably already found someone. They start looking at the
yes.
tapes and looking at actors as soon as they start getting them. And if they find what they're looking for the first day, they're not going to keep looking. So don't wait until the last day to get your tapes in. People,
absolutely,
you know, procrastinate. That's how you lose a job.
Yeah, but, you know, doing it, you know, submitting your tape too late is too late.
Yeah, it's too late.
the
early bird catches the worm, right?
Yes,
there's a reason
exactly.
that expression is in play, because the earlier you do something and the more dedicated they think you are, the more respect you're going to have and the more attention they're going to pay to your tape.
Yeah, I love that, Robin. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That's so true, too, you know. So,
yep.
You know, you say you've got, you know, two clients who are series regulars. What do you think are the standout features about them? What is it about them that stood out? You know, you're saying
they never
a lot
gave
of hard
up.
Work.
They never gave up. They and, never gave oof, up.
I love that.
They started, you know, they have lots of little parts on their resumes. They have medium parts on their resumes, and they have good parts on their resumes. You know, 4 years ago, Noah was doing, you know, three lines on Shameless. And then you turn around and he's a series regular on one of the biggest shows in the world, you know? So
yeah,
actors need to work. And, you know, I'm tired of hearing actors say, oh, I don't want to do, you know, I will only do guest stars. I don't want to do a good co-star role. Well, guess what, guys? There are very few guest star roles now. The guest star roles that used to be are now good co-stars. And the recurring roles are now guest stars. And the series regulars are now recurring roles. So everybody needs to rethink and get rid of your ego.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, it's a different world now. And you need to work. And you need to keep exercising that muscle.
I mean, you know what you're talking about, because, I mean, you've had actors on Euphoria, Reacher, Glamorous, American Crime Story, Abbott Elementary, mm-hmm. and the list goes on and on and on. So
yep.
what you're saying
I've had about six actors on Abbott Elementary, and that's because
brilliant.
I don't waste their time. If an actor goes on for Abbott Elementary and they're not doing a good job, I'm not sending it to casting. I'll either not send it or tell them to do it over again, because
right.
these kids think they can just throw something up there, slap it on and send it in. No, it's got to be good. You know, it's got to be good. So that's why the casting directors trust me, because they know I'm going to send them good tapes and they know that I have good actors. So, you know, and the kid that got Reacher just looked like a young Reacher. So that's why he got it. A lot of times people get roles because they look like the person that they are playing the child of. And I've had so many actors get jobs from that. And that's luck. You know, that's luck and opportunity. So, you know, but my actors that are on series, my actors that recur, those are actors that work all the time and don't turn down jobs and love doing acting, whether it's in two scenes or seven. You know, they don't care. They just want to act. And the actors that are on series right now started out doing one line, Then they went up to two, maybe three. Then they did a little tiny part in a feature. Then they did a bigger part in a feature. Then they did a major part in a little film. Then they did a big, small part in a big film. It, you know, it just, you've got to want to work and you've got to be hungry. You have to be hungry. If you lose your hunger, you're dead.
Yeah, that curiosity factor too, you know. Yeah, it's all part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, Noah said to me just the other day, you know, I would love to do something when I'm on hiatus from, you know, I'd love to do little films when I'm on hiatus from The Chosen. Folly does things when he's on hiatus from his series. You know, the actors like to work. They want to work in between. They don't care, you know, and they don't have to do a part as big as what they've been doing. They'll do a little smaller part just to be able to act. So, you know, get your egos out of it and start, you know, wanting to work, because working actors work. And working actors love to act.
Yes. And work begets work, right?
Work begets work, exactly. If you're working, everybody wants you. If you're not working, they don't want you. So I have a lot of actors that say, you know what? You know, my boyfriend's a well-known talent agent, and he represents Eric Roberts. And Eric Roberts is an actor who loves to work. Sometimes he gets paid a lot of money to do work, and other times he gets paid scale. It doesn't matter. He loves to work and he loves good parts, and he will do a part whether it pays a lot or it doesn't. He wants to work and he wants to do good jobs.
And he's in a lot of films. You see him
he's
all the time in television.
And he's in music videos and he's on TV, and he just loves to work. He's an actor that loves to work. And, you know, this is an actor who could have been, you know, won an Academy Award for Pope of Greenwich Village. You know, he's a brilliant actor, but he is at an age now, he's in his 60s, and he's an older man, and he's still handsome, and he just loves to work. So, you know, it's all about how hungry you are and what you want to do and how you want to live your life. You can sit around waiting for huge opportunities, or you can work and make money and be happy with your life. So the happy actors I know are actors that work and love to work. And you see them in all kinds of things, you know. You're like, oh, look who that is, you know. That's fun.
I know. It is very true. You see them, you know, because when you watch some earlier films or television, you see them pop up as background or one-liners.
Yeah,
and exactly. You go, wow, look at that.
Yeah,
thing.
Little
That's
one-liners.
Amazing.
They had to start somewhere, didn't they? Everybody
yes,
starts
exactly.
somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so, very true.
So as we're wrapping up here, what do you love about your job? What makes
Robin
happy?
Oh, my favorite thing
Robin
about
happy?
My job is when a casting director calls me and tells me that my actor got the part. And then I get to get that actor on the phone and tell them they got the part. And they always scream, no matter if it's two lines or it's a whole movie. They scream, you know, just like when we called Kayvon to tell him he got FBI. What? You know, I love that. I love when an actor does that.
I love that. Yeah.
You know, it's just it's the joy in the actor's voice when you hear them scream for joy that they got a part. And that's the best part of my job.
I love that. And so in terms of people wanting to contact you, would you accept unsolicited submissions, or would you rather them come through a manager or a casting
yes,
person?
Yes, you know, a lot of people send me, unsolicited, and so many times they're people in their 40s and 50s and 60s, and I don't, you know, represent people in that age range. So I feel bad that they're wasting their time, but, you know, you need to do your research on the people. You know, if you're a young person and you've got something on your resume and you've got something special, I'm more than happy to take a look at, you know, a little clip that you send me. A picture isn't going to do much for me. I can't really tell much from a picture. But if you send me a little clip of your acting, you know, you're more than welcome to. I may not have time to watch it right away. I will try to watch it. I don't guarantee. But the best way to come is through a manager or to get into, you know, a really good showcase. There's lots of good showcases around for kids and teens. Do your research and find them and get involved, you know? And a lot of them are very, very reasonable. So do your research and get involved in showcases and workshops and, you know, get out there and get seen.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. Be seen, to be heard, to be loved, you know.
That's right. Absolutely, Versa. Absolutely.
Yeah, so one final question. Yes. And that is, what do you think is the most underused word?
What is the most underused word?
Word.
Humility.
That you would like to hear more
humility
being said.
Humility.
Humility.
I want more
Love
actors
that.
To be humble. Yes. Humility. Let's be humble. Let's realize that we're not, you know, God. That we are an actor that is put on this earth to entertain people, and we want as many opportunities to do that as we can get. So humility is a very underused word.
Yeah, it really is. I love that. That's fantastic.
So well, that's I love it. Talking to everybody, well, and I hope everybody learned a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You were fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Robin.
You're
that
so
was
welcome.
Really wonderful.
You're so
Thank
welcome.
Thank you very much.